What's shaking? Hey, I'm Rick Jordan. Today, we're going all in. All right, today I'm so pumped because we have an in-studio guest. And this is someone I've known for a little while. She's amazingly brilliant and amazingly beautiful and just is doing a lot of cool things in the world of AI and blockchain. So listen up, turn up your volume on everything here because welcome for me, Shira Mello. What's up?
Thank you. Hey, what's going on?
What's shaking?
Yeah. What's shaking? All in team, all in podcast. I am here.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
This is awesome. So you're here. You're actually here in Chicago. We've talked about doing this for a while, right? And we were looking at doing remote, but you're here because there's a company, a CEO friend of both of ours and a company you're involved with called Vocodia that literally just went public.
You know, this morning.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So at this time, it's probably like a couple weeks ago. This morning while you're here, they just went public today on the Chicago Board of Trade.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's amazing.
And Tomorrow we're going to be ringing in the bell and I'll be on stage ringing the bell in with them.
That's a first. How does that feel? For real, being up on stage with the bell ringing.
Oh, I mean, it's surreal, right? It's American dream in all sorts. You know, I think that the reality is that only a select few companies end up doing that, but the hard work that goes in it, the journey that goes into it, is a lot more difficult than from like what the picture is. So definitely happy, but there's a lot of work to do right after this.
For sure. I mean, well, you know, my company is Reach Out and we just went public a couple months ago on OTC.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is so cool to me because it's like you come into the office and it's like, it looks and functions just like any other office, just like any other cybersecurity office. I mean, we got a bit cooler of a vibe here, you know, for real, like the most IT companies, you know.
Got the music playing in all the rooms, everything synced.
Yeah, for sure. But it's the everyday stuff, you know, that so many don't have the visibility into. And I say so many don't see because it's not that they don't see it. They probably would love to see it. Yeah. But you'll start to see it as well, like some of the comments about the stock and the direction of the company and all that. And it's there's of course negative things that'll be said, but there's also positive things that'll be said. And generally speaking, that's like a barrier of visibility. You know, so I'm excited for you tomorrow. Capture as much as you can.
Right.
On photos, on video, and then afterwards it's like you're gonna think it's a surreal experience, I'm sure. It's just like getting married, right? Yeah. It's like, where'd that day go?
Right. It was so quick, but so impactful for that day. Yeah.
Or like when your daughter was born, right? It's like, oh my God, that day's gone already.
Yeah. Right. No, and it goes so quick, right? And so everything after that is just like catalyzing so fast. But you're right. The visibility into certain scenarios or into the companies, it's not really visible from that point of view. Yeah. Like you don't realize what's going on in the back end or anything like that. So I think that this is definitely the moment for that.
Yeah, right on. You mentioned something.
For us to share our stories, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And for you to be sharing these stories, too, because, like, I think so many people want to hear what it is to be running a public company. And it's like, okay, great. Like, how do I even get to that first stepping stone?
Yeah, yeah.
So
a lot of it's, I mean, for what you're listening, for everyone listening, a lot of it's actually the same. Like, it's the same day in and day out. It's almost kind of surreal. It's like, oh, yeah, we have stock that's trading. Yeah. And just 3 months ago, well, actually, even like prior to today with the company you're involved with, Vocodia, it's like you didn't have that prior to today. And now it's there. And it's just something that takes a little bit to sink in because you're still just going to, knowing you as I do, you're still just going to push forward. You're still just going to execute the plan. You know, it's almost like, the stock price matters. But at the same time, what matters even more so, it's almost like the price becomes kind of a symptom of what you're doing in the execution of your plan and your vision.
Absolutely. Definitely. It does. Because, I mean, even for most companies like to stay private for a reason, so they don't have to have that mentality of looking at that price or the ticker, right? And I think that, you know, with that being kind of like in front of mind now, it doesn't really change anything, you know, because personally, for me, it's always been about 200% growth. And 200% growth was already top of mind for me every single time. So this is just like a, hey, by the way, you can see it now.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, because I also want to dive into you a little bit too, because you said something about the American dream, which you're Colombian. which is pretty awesome, because I want to talk about that in a bit. What you're talking about the 200% growth, though, I don't want to skip over that, because that's a lot of people like dream of that. You know, if it's an entrepreneur, which you have been there, I've been there, to where it's like we're in a startup mode. It's like we're so grateful that we just took in $30,000 in revenue over the last 6 months. You know, it's like, woo, we're actually making something.
Yeah.
You know? But then it's like 200% growth. Sure, that becomes 60. Then if it's another 200, then that becomes 120, you know, and it continuously doubles. But how long do you think that something like that is sustainable?
I mean, I believe it's really sustainable. I don't think that, I mean, you can see it with Apple right now. You can see it with companies that are just, you know, progressively growing. I mean, Meta.
Yeah.
It's like, it's right there. As long as you can continue to understand, hey, how do we really refine within the culture, within the company, and then also align that with the financial goals, I think that that's really healthy growth. Obviously, having the tech is super important on understanding what that merge looks like for the revenue and all of that. And yeah, you know that yourself. So yeah, it's definitely sustainable, but it's difficult.
Yeah, for sure. I think of like in the future, because Reachout's doing 8 figures in revenue, you know, and it's like, okay, if you take hypothetically 20 million and double that, you know, going to 40 million in revenue, I'm not talking market cap, right? If you go from 20 to 40, that's a big jump. If you go from 40 to 80, that's an even bigger jump. You know, so it's like the 200% growth, as I look out, it's like, I don't know, you know, because it's like the industries, you know, if you're listening, it's like SaaS platforms, any kind of tech company is typically considered successful with a rule of 40 or a rule of 50. I'm sure you know this, right? It's like gross margin percentage plus revenue gain percentage. If it equals 40, you're good. If it equals 50, you're doing really, really good.
Right, right. Well, I think that, you know, when our VC backed us, and when we were going through that process, I really started to understand, hey, what makes a unicorn company? What really brings that valuation to what it needs to be? And I think that SaaS platforms are, there's this like dance, right? Because I'm not really a big fan of SaaS platforms, funny enough. So
that's great.
It's just the reality, right? Like, we once owned software and you can own it. And yeah, I think that's kind of coming back into a trend or into phase of what software can be. But I think that when we talked to our VC, he really gave me an insight of what 200% growth or what a unicorn company looks like. And so I really took that and ingrained it into the process for revenue, for our entire productivity.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just a mantra that I go through.
That's cool. I dig that. All right, I'm going to go back to the American Dream thing.
All right.
Because you're Colombian, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever asked you this. American Colombian. So you were born here?
Born here,
yeah. Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Your family came over here then, first generation?
First generation.
Nice. How did that go for them?
Oh.
What did that look like?
Yeah, it was so difficult. It was really difficult growing up, yeah. I mean, for the most part, you know, my grandmother came here first, and then all the daughters started to come in. My auntie came with her, and then my mom was like kind of like forced through her sister. She was like, no, you're coming here to America. So, it was really difficult. I mean, buying a house, my mom is a homeowner, and, you know, she did it on her own, and she's really like shown me like what it is to be a powerful woman. And That's cool. Women in my family are super, super powerful. And I'm so grateful for them and what they've done and what my mom's been able to, you know, provide for me so I can be here.
And you're a woman in tech too. It's awesome. It's still a minority. You know, I think tides are starting to shift a little bit, which I love.
Right.
Yeah. It's still a minority, but it's awesome to see that, you know. And you're what, 27?
Yeah.
27 years. I got that right. That's to be that, right? And to be part of a company that's going public is just freaking fantastic. Yeah. So you're a badass. Because you said your grandma moved over here, right? She was the one who immigrated. That's interesting, because mine did too. You know, she came over from Wales, you know, which was very interesting to me. So it's like I go all the way back to England and all of that, not Colombia. I mean, clearly it's like not exotic. I'm just glad I have good teeth when my family came from Great Britain, you know? That's a, you
know, it's a common theme over there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, thank God I got this. I'm cool, right? When she came over, where did they end up living at first? Like what city did they end up landing in?
Yeah, that's a good, I think they moved immediately to, they had family in New York. She had like a husband in New York, and then that's
American husband?
No, it was like her husband lived here in the US.
Oh, okay.
And he was Colombian. And so he had moved here. So she moved from love, basically.
Aw.
Like, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. We don't hear too many of those awesome love stories anymore, do we?
No.
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 That's so cool. So from New York, did they just stay there?
No, they went. So he was living. So their family was living in New York, and then they had moved down to Tampa.
Okay.
So yeah, that's where they
ended. That's why you've been in Florida.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Yeah, right on. It's a good place. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Florida's great. I mean, you know, it's not the most like biggest tech scene out there, especially in Tampa Bay, Florida. It's starting to grow,
yeah.
But you know, compared to Palo Alto or bigger cities like Chicago,
Austin.
So it's definitely growing, but it's a little bit harder.
That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, from a tech perspective, because I know just like all of us, right? We've had different jobs. It's like I started at McDonald's, all of that. Yeah, but when did you start getting into tech?
Well, I started getting into tech in 2018 with decentralized technologies and investing into them. So that's when I started getting into tech.
Yeah. I mean, in essence, like blockchain, if we could call that a decentralized technology.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Did you ever get into the NFT space?
Lightly.
This is totally an aside because nowadays they're just not worth anything. But anyways, going back to that, 2018, decentralized tech. Everybody at that point, and still to this day, kind of confused blockchain and crypto.
Yeah.
As if they're like the same thing, whereas like blockchain is really the tech that's kind of behind crypto. Crypto right. just happens to be like this layer of monetization on top of blockchain. Just like anything else can be monetization on top of blockchain, crypto is just that kind of thing. 2018 is early for all of that. Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin might have been, 10 years old at that point, I think?
It's like around 10 grand, right?
Yeah, exactly. People knew about it, but not many did. It still hadn't caught mainstream. Almost next to nobody understood what actual blockchain was.
Yeah.
It was just all crypto, and blockchain was sort of like the straggler behind the forgotten about stepchild.
Yeah.
When that actually was like the firstborn, the prodigal son is really what blockchain is. That's what everything is built on. How did you be like, oh, that looks cool. I think I'm going to do that.
Look, I always wanted to get into investing. I kept hearing everything on the news about this Bitcoin thing. And Bitcoin is the next financial piece. It's like huge. And I just kept going through all these other kinds of all these news channels. And they just kept repeatedly coming up. And I was like, okay, well, let me just go look at it. I was like super young.
And well, I was it's like, 2020. So you're talking 6 years ago. So like 21 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll invest into this. This is like super new and nascent. And I did. And that's how I started getting into it. Somebody was like, oh, it's never going to grow. It's never going to be there. They were going for school for like to be a financial advisor.
Yeah.
I was like, so I was trying to listen to them and I was like making sure I was like, maybe am I checking all the boxes to see if I'm like making the right kind of financial investment. But yeah, no, yeah, I wrote it. And that's how I figured out tech to begin with, but at a financial perspective.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Right? So that's how I started getting into it. And like being first generation, like especially from South America, like my family is like all from there. Especially my family, they are not tech orientated at all. So like learning all of that by myself and going through that, I was like, that was like probably like the biggest shift, like just pushing past that.
Yeah, that's cool. So I mean, so you were looking at really crypto at that point in time.
Right.
Right. And then when did you go deeper, and how did you figure out like, oh, there's a deeper layer to this. There's this thing called blockchain and that's where the magic is.
Yeah, I started investing a little bit right before the crypto haze, like the craziness of it and during COVID.
Yeah.
I started diving deeper into NFTs. I started understanding that a little bit. I think a lot of people did too.
Yeah, for sure.
But I understood the technology, but then I took it a step further to understand the technology a lot deeper. And that was the point of catalyzing versus understanding NFTs or what was going up and down in value. I really focused on the the proposition of each chain and what they were bringing. And I was like, oh, there's a need in the market. I was like, oh, there's a big need. No one knows about this.
Yeah. So you look deeper into like the Ethereum chain, the Binance chain, all of that.
All of that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then like, and then also how to like create layer two. And then I started creating a white paper behind it. And then I met Jason Mello, which is, you know, our CTO. Yeah. And he was also the founder of Paxo. So it's like, oh, well, that just worked out heavenly.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, that was just like the perfect merge.
Didn't we just talk about like the love stories don't exist anymore, but then there's one, right? That actually got involved in tech too. That's cool.
Yeah.
For everybody listening, I mean, she talks about him like he's a third person, but it's actually her husband too. So it's, he's a really brilliant dude, you know, doesn't hold a candle to his wife though. So Jason brings an interesting piece to the puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, which is really cool. So was this like late night sessions with a bottle of wine as he started like unraveling the world of blockchain for you?
Kind of, yeah. No, it was super professional. We met and we had like, basically, I told him, I was like, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to create. And he was like, yeah, this is interesting. And at that point, he had like another startup that he was involved in, that their unicorn company, actually, funny enough. He's like, I don't know if I'm going to leave my unicorn company right now for, you know, a startup again. So it took a lot of convincing. So yeah, that was, but the vision was there, and he saw that there was a great opportunity to really create something different. So we actually, we have a privacy solution for, think of it like architecture privacy vaults, but they're privacy vaults on the blockchain.
Cool.
So yeah. So
tell me about that a bit, because that's we've talked about that. Hold on. I swallowed weird when I drank this. Dang it.
I took a.
Yeah, no kidding. I took a drink, and good God, it just went like while you're talking, went too fast right to the back of my throat.
But did you take a sip? I didn't see you take a sip.
You didn't see me take a sip? No,
I did while you were talking. So fast.
Exactly. Too fast. Like I pounded water like it was a shot. That part we can keep in. It's funny. So I almost made Shira do a spit take. Yeah. All right. Cool. Woo. Okay. I think I'm cool. I have a cough box. You don't have a cough box. See this little guy down here? Exactly. Anyways. All right, cool. Well, thanks. All right, here we go. We good? Yeah, okay. Of course we're good. We're keeping going. All right. Private security vault.
Yeah.
You told me about this a little while ago, and I was so intrigued coming from the cybersecurity space. Yeah, but it's interesting. Can you break it down, you know, not so technical, but in like very, very minimize terms so that we can just follow you, because it is a technical thing. It's an extremely technical thing, but it gives a very human result to it.
Yeah. So think about, so the first use case that started to come out of this was an AI company that came up to us, and the AI company was like, hey, I have an AI model that's got like 7 million database points inside of it, like of students. It was a platform that focuses on, you know, keeping children safe. And so they had 7 million students on their database. So really sensitive information, right?
Yeah.
They were serving multiple states, and they were like, how can we, you know, implement the blockchain into a solution on our AI? And we're like, yeah, you can definitely do that. And especially on our platform, because our platform, you're able to create real world assets, or also blockchain applications on our platform. That's originally where we started. And we were a no-code platform for that. Sorry, this thing's coming out. And so they came out to us and they were like, hey, how do we do this? And I was like, well, you know, what do you want to get out? So they're like, okay, well, we have sensitive information in our database and we don't want it associated with the children. So like, we don't want that at all on our database. And it's like, great.
But they still want to use AI to extract valuable analysis of certain things, you know,
exactly.
The kids, you know, like probably how they're doing in school, like if there's specific demographics, you know, if it's kids that are like I was, I'm dumbing it down here, way down, you know, not trying to minimize anything because it's actually badass is what this does. You know, like I was one of the younger kids always in my class versus like the older kid in the class, you know, just because of where the date cutoff was, you know, I would be curious to see it's like who excels more, you know, something like that, just based off of if it's like somebody who was right before the cutoff or right after the date cutoff or age.
Right, right. So what they do is threat detection. So they're focused on
threat. Oh, very cool.
So any kind of threat detection within the child or the school.
Yeah.
So if there's a mass shooting or if the child's at threat of suicide. And so it's really, you know, sensitive information of children. And and ultimately, you know, what they didn't want is that information to continue. Obviously, it doesn't even right now. But what they really wanted to add is an extra layer of protection and preventative cybersecurity, essentially.
Yeah, it's a separation of the identifiable information with the actual anonymized data points.
Exactly. Yep. And so what we do is, so what we created was a synthetic data set that's very similar to the same data set of the child or the entire school, like the children in the school. And then what we did is put that synthetic data into the database, and then we took the actual information and put it into a private network. The private network is owned by them. They have full control. They have access of that. And then we have a sentinel that's kind of like on the outside of it. I don't want to use a super technical term, right? So we have something that basically like covers it, right, on top of that to phone home if you need the real information, to get that information to tap into that. So that's what we created. And this is all full on-premise solution, and it's in data, like it's in real-time data flow.
Yeah, on-premise meaning not in the cloud. Localized, which is interesting because it's everybody, I mean, there's always been a push to the cloud for the last decade, right? But then at the same time, when your data is stored locally, that's like one of the most secure freaking things that you ever could possibly have, you know, because it doesn't go anywhere. It literally doesn't go anywhere. That's cool. Your earpiece is bothering you.
Huh? Yeah, it is. See it like coming out.
No, you're good. Yeah. Just got weird ears.
Colombian little ears here.
Oh, is that it? Like, for real? Is that like a trait? No. A genetic trait? I don't know.
No, I'm just joking.
I always wonder that, though. Like, when I see people on TV, it's like sometimes there's these guys who have, like, you know, the tiniest little ears, but then there's also these ones that end up being, like, super huge. I'm like, what ethnicity are they? Because, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, but it's like if I'm looking at two white guys, you know, it's like, what's the difference? Why did this guy have like Dumbo ears and this one has like these little tiny things?
So we're solid now.
Yeah, yeah. The curiosities that I have.
Seriously.
Curious. Yes.
Now you guys have a little personal insight into Rick Jordan. For real. But
So the privacy vault, we should keep some of this in. It's kind of fun. Yeah. Just the rants. Yeah, right on. Good. Good. I'm glad we're keeping some of this in. I mean, we were talking about the cloud and how the most secure thing is having something, the tech term is on premise,
right?
You know, which means, hey, it's right here. You keep it there. But there's of course limitations to that too.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no accessibility to even other systems that might need that, you know, except I think what you're saying is that you stop me where I'm wrong, because I don't think we got this deep before. You almost act as kind of like a traffic cop, almost like a gatekeeper to the real data, you know? So it's like, it sounds like you take a copy of the real data, sort of anonymize it, you know, make it a synthetic form that is similar, but not exact.
Right.
And then that's what's pushed out to the AI model. So you can learn and do the analysis and get the points you need to accomplish whatever outcome you're looking for. And those individuals are not even those individuals, but the individuals, the kids, they're completely safe because there's no identifiable information whatsoever. But on the other side of it, somebody who might need to see that, like the child's parent.
Boom.
Right. So they have access to the AI model, but then you're the traffic cop that says, hey, only let this person in.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Boom.
All right.
And downloadable.
So yeah.
Download that software too. So it's, there's no developers needed to do a manual process to implement the software on top of that. So we're totally zero trust model.
That's brilliant. So I think I broke that down pretty well.
Super well.
Okay. So if you're, I mean, DM us, whatever, if you have questions, but it's really cool tech. Yeah. You know, and it's something that can keep kids safe. I can see other, I mean, fintech. A lot of other use. Yeah, fintech, sure.
Healthcare, you know. So right now we're going after health tech companies. Health tech companies that are focused on AI, health tech companies that are just health tech company systems, right?
Yeah.
And then also fintech companies that are focused on different industries inside of there, the payment processing system, the way up to like credit card acceptance and all of that. So yeah, those are complete different industries, but they all have the same kind of responsibility, GDPR, some kind of compliance responsibility. And that's the ICP, I guess.
That's cool. I can't help but notice that it's only been 6 years since you first were like, hey, there's this fun thing called Bitcoin that's out there, to now it's like tomorrow you're going to be standing on the stage at Chicago Board of Trade is part of a company that's going public, you know, an AI company, you know, and I know some of the cool things you're doing with them. Still, though, that's a very, very short period of time, you know, and that's one of the things I admire is I don't think you ever lost sight of where you wanted to be. Like, as soon as you got it, and this is something I talk about all the time, I'm going to talk you up here for a little bit because I think you have a natural curiosity. That's the only thing that I can describe. Otherwise, I mean, where else could it have been? I mean, how in the world were you like, yeah, Bitcoin's cool, to just 6 years later being like, oh, hey, you know, tomorrow I'm going to stand on the stage and ring the bell.
Yeah. I mean, like, it wasn't out of like luck, you know. I mean, people say, you know, luck is a big part of it, but no, it's not an overnight success either. Like 6 years is still 6 years, yep, right? Yep. And that's like prior to entrepreneurship that I had been trying even before, right?
Yeah.
So it's not an overnight thing where I just got into business and it was just like, okay, cool, like this is what it is. No. You know, I think the biggest thing for me has been the curiosity to put myself in the right rooms, hey, ask the right questions, and then continuously put myself around amazing people, right? And making sure that I add value to every single piece that I'm going into. You know, like, it's not facade, right? Some people go out there and they claim tech and they really don't have it. And yeah, so like, this is the difference between professionals and facade.
Yeah.
And so that's really what I bring down, hands down, 10 toes down.
That's the first time I've ever heard that. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. You know, I mean, to be a Colombian American and just get to this point, it's truly inspirational. And it's a short period of time, but at the same time, it's like you feel it's long. I can relate to that because it's the same thing, right? It's like back from when Reach Out finally hit, you know, seven figures was only 6 years ago. So the going public process took almost 4 years to go through all the stages that we needed to go through.
And you've been saying it out loud every single time. Every single time you've been on stage, you've been saying that. We're a public company. We're going to be public. Consistently just being that and just showing that, it just shows.
Yeah.
And look where you are right now.
Yep.
But it does feel like a long time, right?
It does,
Because it is a long time.
Yep, for sure. I don't think this is new. I mean, even on your IG bio, you know, it says building a public company. It's the same thing. That's been up there way before, you know, Vocodia was public.
Yeah.
You know, which is awesome. So I hope everybody's catching this, because it's like you mentally step in to where you know you're going to get to. And the only way that you can know you're going to get to is to actually mentally step in.
Exactly.
It's the anchor point.
Every single mindset coach will tell you the same thing too.
Yeah.
The same thing that you're saying right now is just always put it there, say it, and keep saying it, right? These continual rituals that you need to be doing for yourself. And it's not the only thing, obviously, but that's a big piece right there.
Yeah, right on. I love it. Everybody can find you. I mean, I know Instagram, right? Shira.me.
Yeah.
Right? Where else can they go to touch base with you?
Yeah, you can either email me at Shira@touchbrick.com, or you can find me on, or you can go on our website at touchbrick.com as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Go there, check it out. There's some cool stuff there. But then listen to this again and send it to at least three people, because we just broke it down today for you. You got to get to know this girl. She's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Boom. Yeah. Boom.